Sir, we've got a breach. The outer door, sir. Fire the canisters. Now, Troy said. Saul radioed the control room down the hall and relayed the message. The view of the airlock filled with a white fog. Secure the server room, Troy added. Lock it down. He had this portion of the order memorized. Make sure we have a recent backup just in case, and put them on our power. Yes, sir. Those in the room who had something to do seemed less anxious than the others, who were left shifting about nervously while they watched and listened. Where's my outside view? Troy asked. The mist-filled scene of people pushing on one another's backs through a white cloud was replaced by an expansive shot of the outside, of a claustrophobic crowd scampering across a dry land, of people collapsing to their knees, clawing at their faces and their throats, a billowing fog rising up from the teeming ramp. No one in the comm room moved or said a word. There was a soft cry from the hallway. Troy shouldn't have allowed them to stay and watch. Okay, he said. Shut it down. The view of the outside went black. There was no point in watching the crowd fight their way back in. No reason to witness the frightened men and women dying on the hills. I want to know why it happened. Troy turned and studied those in the room. I want to know, and I want to know what we do to prevent this next time. He handed the folder and the microphone back to the men at their stations. Don't tell the other silo heads just yet, not until we have answers for the questions they'll have. Saul raised his hand. What about the people still inside 12? The only difference between the people in silo 12 and the people in silo 13 is that there won't be future generations growing up in silo 12. That's it. Everyone in all the silos will eventually die. We all die, Saul. Even us. Today was just their day. He nodded to the dark monitor and tried not to picture what was really going on over there. We knew this would happen, and it won't be the last. Let's concentrate on the others. Learn from it. There were nods around the room. Individual reports by the end of this shift, Troy said, feeling for the first time that he was actually in charge of something. And if anyone from 12's IT staff can be raised, debrief them as much as you can. I want to know who, why, and how. Several of the exhausted people in the room stiffened before trying to look busy. The gathering in the hallway shrank back as they realized the show was over and the boss was heading their way. The boss. Troy felt the fullness of his position for the first time, the heavy weight of responsibility. There were murmurs and sidelong glances as he headed back to his office. There were nods of sympathy and approval, men thankful that they occupied lower posts. Troy strode past them all. More will try to escape, Troy thought. For all their careful engineering, there was no way to make a thing infallible. The best they could do was plan ahead, stockpile spares, not mourn the dark and lifeless cylinder as it was discarded and others were turned to with hope. Back in his office, he closed the door and leaned back against it for a moment. His shoulders stuck to his coveralls with the light sweat worked up from the swift walk. He took a few deep breaths before crossing to his desk and resting his hand on his copy of the order. The fear persisted that they'd gotten it all wrong. How could a room full of doctors plan for everything? Would it really get easier as the generations went along? As people forgot, and the whispers from the original survivors faded. Troy wasn't so sure. He looked over at his wall of schematics, That large blueprint showing all the silos spread out amid the hills. 50 circles spaced out like stars on an old flag he had once served. A powerful tremor coursed through Troy's body. His shoulders, elbows, and hands twitched. He gripped the edge of his desk until it passed. Opening the top drawer, he picked up a red marker and crossed to the large schematic, the shivers still racking his chest. Before he could consider the permanence of what he was about to do, before he could consider that this mark of his would be on display for every future shift, before he could consider that this may become a trend, an action taken by his replacements, he drew a bold X through Silo 12. The marker squealed as it was dragged violently across the paper. It seemed to cry out. Troy blinked away the blurry vision of the red X and sagged to his knees. He bent forward until his forehead rested against the tall spread of papers, old plans rustling and crinkling as his chest shook with heavy sobs. With his hands in his lap, shoulders bent with the weight of another job he'd been pressured into, Troy cried. He bawled as silently as he could, so those across the hall wouldn't hear. Chapter 13. The Year 2049. RYT Hospital, Duane Medical Center. Donald had toured the Pentagon once, had been to the White House twice, went in and out of the Capitol building a dozen times a week, but nothing he'd seen in D.C. prepared him for the security around RYT's Duane Medical Center. The lengthy checks hardly made the hour-long meeting with the senator seem worthwhile. By the time he passed through the full body scanners leading to the nanobiotech wing, he'd been stripped, given a pair of green medical scrubs to wear, had a blood sample taken, and had allowed every sort of scanner and bright light to probe his eyes and record, so they said, the infrared capillary pattern of his face. Heavy doors and sturdy men blocked every corridor as they made their way deeper and deeper into the NBT wing. When Donald spotted the Secret Service agents, who'd been allowed to keep their dark suits and shades, he knew he was getting close. A nurse scanned him through a final set of stainless steel doors. The nanobiotic chamber awaited him inside. Donald eyed the massive machine warily. He'd only ever seen them on TV dramas, and this one loomed even larger in person. It looked like a small submarine that had been marooned to the upper floors of the RYT. Hoses and wires led away from the curved and flawless white exterior in bundles. Studded along the length were several small glass windows that brought to mind the portholes of a ship. "And you're sure it's safe for me to go in?" He turned to the nurse. "Because I can always wait and visit him later." The nurse smiled. She couldn't be out of her 20s, had her brown hair wrapped in a knot in the back of her head, was pretty in an uncomplicated way. "It's perfectly safe," she assured him. "His nanos won't interact with your body. We often treat multiple patients in a single chamber." She led him to the end of the machine and spun open the locking wheel at the end. A hatch opened with a sticky, ripping sound from the rubber seals and let out a slight gasp of air from the difference in pressure.
"If it's so safe, then why are the walls so thick?"
A soft laugh. "You'll be fine." She waved him toward the hatch. "There'll be a slight delay and a little buzz after I seal this door, and then the inner hatch will unlock. Just spin the wheel and push to open."
"I'm a little claustrophobic," Donald admitted.
God, listen to himself. He was an adult. Why couldn't he just say he didn't want to go in and have that be enough? Why was he allowing himself to be pressured into this? "Just step inside, please, Mr. Keene." The nurse placed her hand on the small of Donald's back. Somehow the pressure of a young and pretty woman watching was stronger than his abject terror of the oversized capsule packed with its invisible machines. He wilted and found himself ducking through the small hatch, his throat constricting with fear. The door behind him thumped shut, leaving him in a curved space, hardly big enough for two. The locks clanked into the jamb. There were tiny silver benches set into the arching walls on either side of him. He tried to stand up, but his head brushed the ceiling. An angry hum filled the chamber. The hair on the back of his neck stood on end, and the air felt charged with electricity. He looked for an intercom, some way to communicate with the senator through the inner door so he didn't have to go in any further. It felt as though he couldn't breathe. He needed to get out. There was no wheel on the outer door. Everything had been taken out of his control. The inner locks clanked. Donald lunged for the door and tried the handle. Holding his breath, he opened the hatch and escaped the small airlock for the larger chamber in the center of the capsule.
Donald!
Senator Thurman looked up from a thick book. He was sprawled out on one of the benches running the length of the long cylinder. A notepad and pen sat on a small table. A plastic tray held the remnants of dinner.
Hello, sir, he said, barely parting his lips. Don't just stand there, get in. You're letting the buggers out.
Against his every impulse, Donald stepped through and pushed the door shut. And Senator Thurman laughed.
You might as well breathe, son. They could crawl right through your skin if they wanted to.
Donald let out his breath and shivered. It may have been his imagination, but he thought he felt little pinpricks all over his skin, bites like Savannah's no-see-ums on summer days.
You can't feel 'em, Senator Thurman said. It's all in your head. They know the difference between you and me.
Donald glanced down and realized he was scratching his arm.
Have a seat.
Thurman gestured to the bench opposite his. He had the same color scrubs on and a few days' growth on his chin. Donald noticed the far end of the capsule opened onto a small bathroom, a showerhead with a flexible hose clipped to the wall. Thurman swung his bare feet off the bench and grabbed a half-empty bottle of water, took a sip. Donald obeyed and sat down, a nervous sweat tickling his scalp. A stack of folded blankets and a few pillows sat at the end of the bench. He saw how the frames folded open into cots, but couldn't imagine being able to sleep in this tight coffin.
You wanted to see me, sir?
He tried to keep his voice from cracking. The air tasted metallic, a hint of the machines on his tongue.
Drink?
The senator opened a small fridge below the bench and pulled out a bottle of water.
Thanks.
Donald accepted the water, but didn't open it, just enjoyed the cool against his palm.
Mick said he filled you in.
He wanted to add that this meeting felt unnecessary.
Thurman nodded. He did. Met with him yesterday. He's a solid boy.
The senator smiled and shook his head.
The irony is, this class we just swore in, probably the best bunch the Hill has seen in a very long time.
The irony? Thurman waved his hand, shooing the question away.
You know what I love about this treatment.
Practically living forever? Donald nearly blurted.
It gives you time to think. A few days in here, nothing with batteries allowed, just a few books to read and something to write on, really clears your head.
Donald kept his opinions to himself. He didn't want to admit how uncomfortable the procedure made him, how terrifying it was to be in that room right then. Knowing that tiny machines were coursing through the senator's body, picking through his individual cells and making repairs, repelled him. Supposedly, your urine turned the color of charcoal once all the machines shut down. He trembled at the thought.
Isn't that nice? Thurman asked.
He took a deep breath and let it out.
The quiet.
Donald didn't answer. He realized he was holding his breath again. Thurman looked down at the book in his lap, then lifted his gaze to study Donald.
Did you know your grandfather taught me how to play golf?
Donald laughed.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures of you two together.
He flashed back to his grandmother, flipping through old albums. She had this outmoded obsession with printing the pictures from her computer and stuffing them in books, said they became more real once they were displayed like that.
You and your sister have always felt like family to me, the senator said.
The sudden openness was uncomfortable. A small vent in the corner of the pod circulated some air, but it still felt warm in there.